Yeah. Five killers arise from graves that within. They shed the dead weight of morals and sins. Set loose by Zeus, declare space time, and lead the murderous horde known as Experience Grind.
Welcome, everybody, to the Experience Grind podcast, the show about getting older and the experiences that we've learned from movies, music, TV, whatever. My name is Sean, and I am your host this week. And with me, I have Cowboy Kyle. Kyle, what's crack-a-lackin', bud?
I'm amazed at all the people that I loved as a child are in this fucking TV show that I loved as a child.
It is
a really convoluted way to say nothing.
It is funny how that works out. With him, we've got Mailman Dave. Dave, pop in to give us the news. What's up?
I thought that Kyle was going to say that it was amazing seeing all the people that he loved in his childhood are now dead. After watching this, you realize how many people are dead.
Elvira, still kicking.
Still kicking. Still looking smoking.
So is Larry Fishburne. Yes. So is Larry Fishburne.
I love that his headshot said Larry on it.
Larry. Mm-hmm. So good.
It's real cash.
Oh, man. And there's a third voice that everybody just heard. Oh, no. It's Jombie's cousin, Brian. Brian, can you grant me the ability to fly?
Sure, Sean.
Oh, I am the luckiest boy in the world.
I really thought you were going to go with Miss Brian.
Yvonne?
Fuck that.
Name is Brian, so I...
Oh, that would work way better.
Oh, yeah, you were going to play on words.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Play on. Got it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What's then I kind of
funny
Charlie's
is in the IMDb that I was looking at, Jombie was right next to that, and I was like, Brian-bee? That doesn't work. What an idiot. Also, can we all agree that Kyle is really just Randy? That foul little puppet child.
I'm Randy. I'll take it.
Yeah, I knew you would.
I mean, you sounded begrudgingly.
Look, I guess I could be.
Yeah, I mean, hey, when you call it, you call it.
Yeah, yeah.
I just want to smoke. More like a globie.
You were a globetrotter.
Boy, yeah, I saw myself as more of a cool cat.
Yeah? Was that a character?
You. Yeah, he plays the bass in the band with Chicky.
Man, we will get into this shortly, the characters and stuff. But guys, I gathered you all here this week to chat about the new, and by new, I mean like at time of recording, a couple of weeks ago, just came out, the 2025 documentary, two-part series, Pee-wee as himself. The last thing that Paul Reubens did, directed by Matt Wolff.
It's not the last thing he did.
What's that?
Dying was the last thing he did.
That's true. But I mean, do you want to get that, technical. Or is that a lack of doing?
I feel like that it's an active thing that you do, and then after it's nothing. Even though he got cremated after, so he did another thing.
That's true.
But did he get cremated? Dave, why do you know that he got cremated?
Oh, I Googled it. I Googled the shit out of it.
Did you?
He didn't cremate himself, though, so I don't know that you could say he did that.
Why did he not leave another voice memo saying, hey, guys, I don't know why I just as if I'm in a radio tower, but hey, guys, I'm going to get cremated. Leave this in the
Breaker. Dock. This is Pee-wee in the coffin. I'm going to get cremated.
Coffin was the magic word.
And after I go, make sure you tell him Paul Reubens sent you.
You're like, who? Oh. Who?
Who?
Oh my God.
Paul Reubenfeld?
Guys, I wanted to do something a little bit different with this week than what we normally do. With movies, we're typically going through all of these different categories and breaking it in different ways. And I don't feel like this is really the kind of thing that you can really do with something like this. So I instead wanted to do something that was more of a, I don't know, depending, I don't know your guys' feelings at all surrounding this. Brian, Dave, I was on Pee-wee's Big Adventure. I don't remember it at all. So I don't know how you feel. and I'm not going to listen back. But listeners, that's on a Caped Podcasters episode. You
way
can go find
back
it.
In the day.
Way back in the day, super drunk. Like, it's so far back that I was drinking.
Were we in person for that one? I don't remember.
We were not.
Okay.
No. Mitch and I were at my house, and that's right. Then the two of you were remote, and we did, I believe, the Ninja Turtles Christmas
special. Oh, the Christmas episode.
Just yeah. That's why we started with the Christmas episode.
Yeah.
Oh,
I was shit-faced by the end of that.
You double feature.
Yeah. So yeah. Me and Brian have a tradition where for Christmas episodes, we get incredibly drunk and then mm-hmm. do the episode. And we usually will do a Patreon episode before and kind of lube ourselves up. And it's never worked out.
No, it's never been good.
But that's why you do it.
Yeah.
Apparently the Pee Wee one's pretty good.
I'll believe you. Maybe? Yes.
Yeah. That's Caped Podcasters episode 63 that came out in January.
Wow.
2020.
That was a double digit epi.
Prior to Beer Me a Movie.
Yeah.
Crazy.
Way back.
Wow. Well, boys, I view this as like a celebration of Pee Wee, a celebration of Paul Reubens. And I want to actually ask you guys kind of a series of questions before we even get into what we watched for this. And the first one that I wanted to ask is like, what are your earliest memories of Pee Wee? Was it seeing Pee Wee's Big Adventure? Was it fragmented memories of Pee Wee's Playhouse? Did you get introduced to Paul Reubens in Blow, and then you just like retroactively went back and you're like, let me check out this guy's old shit? And you're like,
let's check the catalog.
Like, that would be crazy.
And then just
where's this guy been hiding?
So yeah, right? Much Pee Wee Herman content.
But Brian, how about you, man? Like, what is, do you have early Pee Wee memories or Paul Reubens memories?
Not
like,
a ton. I remember watching Pee-wee's Big Adventure several times as a kid, but I didn't ever really watch any of the shows. I didn't really watch Pee-wee's Playhouse, which I guess would have been the only one that would have been appropriate for me at the time. I basically, yeah, just knew Big Adventure, and then when he showed up in Batman Returns.
Oh, yeah! He was bemonocled, huh? Is bemonocled the word?
It is Oswald now. Cobblepot's dad.
Yeah. Which wow. He also you did in Gotham, up. I'm pretty sure.
Wow.
He was in Gotham too?
Yeah, he came back as Oswald Cobblepot's father.
It's kind of interesting that he did do that favor for Tim Burton, because he seems to have a bit of animosity for him in this documentary, it seems.
Did he?
I
mean, not
pick
like
up
overtly,
that.
But... And it is hard to tell with him during the whole thing, too, because
yeah.
Kind of by design.
He plays
though.
With his yeah. own. He's purposefully an unreliable narrator, but I don't. I mean, yeah. I got. It just bothered him, obviously, that. Here's why I do think it was legit, because he ends up having the same issue with the director of this documentary.
Sometimes.
Has a falling out with
it's
him.
It's a fascinating thing that he went through.
It's very crazy. That's a long roundabout way, Sean, to say, wouldn't it be funny if one of us actually hated him and thought he was guilty of everything? Well, that's not me.
Yeah.
I was there. I was watching him. I know what he did.
Dude, I love Pee-wee. I actually do have early memories of Pee-wee, to the fact that I, until like really this documentary, learning it, because I never did much deep research on the Pee-wee lore, I always thought the TV show was first. Because
same.
That's what I grew up with as a kid. I had VHS tapes of Pee-wee's Playhouse that, like, I would watch actively. Wow. I remember watching it at my grandparents' house one year when the whole family went to the Indy 500, and the kids had to stay back because we were too small for that, and I watched my Pee-wee's VHSs.
Honestly, I feel like you caught the solid end of that deal.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
They got to watch a... A lot of cars make lefts, and you got to watch Miss Yvonne ride a bull.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
The first episode is that one where the fat lady in the muumuu gets like the makeover by Miss Yvonne, and I had that. They kept showing clips of it in the documentary. I was like, ah, that's one of the ones I had. But yeah, I have fond memories.
This might be
of
a weird
show.
Question for anybody who's really younger than us, but I think it puts a smile on my face asking this. Did you have like a legit like store bought copy, or did you record episodes onto a VHS tape that you just like watched into oblivion?
No, these were legit store-bought copies. I think I got them for a birthday because I did like the Saturday morning show. I would watch it. I would get up, and I liked Pee-wee. I was all about it. I think I had like a Pee-wee action figure for a while as a kid. I could do the Pee-wee impression and the Urkel impression. Those were like the two I had in the bag.
Those are good ones.
So, nice. Yeah, I'm a big, huge fan of Paul Reubens my entire life. He's right on. He was always innocent.
Dave, let me round off with you.
Pee-wee's always been a big part of my life. It's Pee-wee's Big Adventure is one of those movies that I saw way too young, and it kind of shaped my comedy a lot and kind of the way I look at the world. I remember watching Pee-wee's Playhouse just about every single Saturday morning growing up, and it's even something that's carried over into college. I remember freshman year of college, Pee-wee's Playhouse would come on. I think it was like Nick at Night or one of those late night shows, and me and my roommate would watch it. And whenever they said the secret word, we would lose our shit in the dorm rooms. And it was amazing because like we would just repeatedly do this. This was like week after week. And we have people on the floor just starting to get really pissed off at us. And I remember the like senior RA had to come down. She said, I can't believe I'm going to say this. You need to stop watching fucking Pee-wee.
Man, I wonder That's if incredible. She thinks about that moment ever.
How just pathetic it was.
Yeah, the fact that she had to two grown ass men go.
She opens the door.
She had to be the fun police.
And chide
is the light from the TV of Pee-wee blasting at like a level 26 on some little 28 inch.
It was like I want to say it was a 33 inch tube. Like it was. Mm-hmm.
Oh,
it was
of course
heavy
it was
to get up there. Yeah. It had the VCR attachment on the bottom too.
Oh. Listen to this high rolling mother.
Two in one.
Right?
King of the
First,
castle.
Kyle's
King of the
got
castle.
Store bought VHSs, and Dave's got a full ass combo piecemeal over right? here. God.
I had this
damn.
Tiny little 19 inch TV in my dorm room, and it could not play VHS tapes.
What was the point in that?
Right? I was just watching basic cable provided by the university. Yeah. But we did get MTV too, so I got to watch Wonder Shows. And
hey, what a great show.
That was a show that probably never should have aired.
It's one that have like really formed my comedy sensings. And
you could definitely see the influence from Pee-wee on it.
All right, I'm taking you guys on kind of a roller coaster here. Dave, since you just so emphatic, big part of your life, I've got to know, you're a little bit younger than us, at least
barely,
younger than me.
Yeah. I'm probably a year younger than all of you. Yeah.
Okay.
Oh, definitely.
This guy's old, too.
Look at him.
Oh, Kyle, did your He's AARP got card come in yet?
Let me say this real quick. I did the test today. I asked two of my newest teammates today. I was like, hey, if I said the name Pee-wee Herman, have you guys ever heard of that? Both of them looked me dead-eyed. Never.
Oh, that's depressing.
How old are they?
Like early 20s.
That's a shame, really. That's a shame.
Okay, I'm seeing...
That's a failing on their part.
I'm seeing like a crossover, an overlap in this pie graph of Paul Reubens Pee-wee and knowing how to use a computer. And there's a certain point where you can't use a computer and you've never heard of Pee-wee. They're... Just saying. Conspiracy. Somebody tell Ryan about that conspiracy theory. Anyways, Dave, when did you first hear about the incident?
It was probably right after it happened, tell you the truth.
Yeah.
Like, I remember just how weird and awkward it was, because I knew who Pee-wee was at the time already. And then hearing what happened, it's like the name Paul Reubens, you're like, okay, I don't know what that is. They're like, it's Pee-wee. And then you see his mugshot, and you're just like, wait, that thing is the same. What?
But as a grown-ass adult, I don't know how he grew all of that in between seasons. Insane, first off. But second off, like I had a really hard time trying to figure out and pinpoint exactly when it was for me. It was at school sometime.
Yeah.
And it's one of those like, water cooler. I don't know why it's a water cooler moment at school, but water fountain moment.
Water fountain
hanging
moment.
Out by the
yeah.
water fountain, taking our Adderall. Hey, did you hear? Got arrested, beaten it, and you're like, what's that even mean?
It's 1991. I'm a child. I have no idea what that means.
I was 7 years old when it happened.
Yeah.
Crazy.
I remember my mom telling me about it, but I didn't understand like what the problem was. Mm-hmm. He was at a movie theater and pulled his wiener out, and I was like, I pull my wiener out all the time. What's
the difference?
Can I get arrested for that?
You go dick in a box and you kind of like put the popcorn on it. He just left that part out. He didn't feel like getting up and getting a concession and drilling the hole. I mean, you know,
sometimes, hey man, snakes got to breathe, you know?
We're
just that's fellas, what they say. Right, snakes gotta breathe.
Come on,
that's
fellas.
A famous saying.
You know, you gotta let air out.
I didn't see that when we went and saw Lion King last week, but Nurse Nancy sounds pretty good.
I don't. This was also like at the same time around George Michael got busted for a similar thing that was, I think, also kind of really just trumped up, homosexual like. Chasing
it seems to be
to like
yeah. a common thread in string that we're gonna see here through this, but Brian around the same time, I'm assuming.
Yeah It was definitely elementary school talking about it, and I was like, I don't know what any of this means, but no, not Pee-wee.
Was this something for you guys where it just kind of kept coming up, like every now and again it got mentioned or brought up, or
yeah,
whenever you mention Pee-wee or Paul Rubens, it's like that's always the thing that comes up, right?
It is, and it's a shame, really,
yeah,
because mm-hmm. it's one of those, like, we just started recording, this is the first thing you're bringing up.
Yeah,
like that should never be the case with a guy who's got a star on the Walk of Fame. He's been a huge part of our childhood. We shouldn't go right to him beating off in a movie theater.
Allegedly.
It's just a shame.
Agreed.
Allegedly. Apologies.
I'm giving him the allegedly.
Well, it was just one of those stupid DAs that just wanted to make a name for himself.
Exactly.
That's all it is. The charges. Yeah.
It's kind of like, I don't want to compare it to Roman Polanski, because Roman Polanski did it, and Roman Polanski got in trouble, but he also had a DA who wanted to be a celebrity DA.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So it's, I don't know. I get so upset whenever I hear these stories about just these people who are supposed to be fighting crime, and they're just actively trying to ruin people's lives
to make a name for themselves.
So I'm glad that you say, like, it's so fucked up that this is the first thing literally that we're talking about. But I think it's important to me and my experiences, you know, my experiences through my life with Pee-wee and Paul Rubens, that for a large part for me, from being a child and hearing about that and constantly hearing it being brought up and it being bashed into me, how gross, how terrible, whatever, it definitely for a long time tainted my view of someone that I wish had never had my view of them tainted. And that is so fucked up for something like this. Not only, okay, I'm being selfish here. It's so fucked up for me as a person who loved him as a child to have lost such a large part of that, because people just made something into something that it was not, kind of, not really, allegedly, whatever. I've got to ask, did you guys ever know about the second thing? I never even knew about the porn thing in 2001.
That one I very much remember, because it was one of those like, oh, here we go again type scenarios. Yeah. But I was older at this point, and hearing it, you're just like, all right, now I don't know what to believe because of what just happened 10 years ago. This is absolutely crazy that it's here we go again.
Right.
But then now actually watching the documentary and seeing what it actually was, like, come on, guys.
Yeah.
It makes
you want to put a hole in a wall. I, at that point, and this is probably either media illiteracy or media being twisted in a way. Everybody knows this. The day It's 2025. We all know how things can get twisted and things can be portrayed to you. All I heard during that time was he's a registered sex offender. Right. That's all I heard.
Because
and that's
he weirdly
all you know.
Took it as a plea to be a registered sex offender only for a certain year. Amount of time.
Yep. Right.
But here you are 10 years later.
What kind of plea deal is that?
I Googled it earlier today, and one of the first things that popped up was a Reddit thread being, Paul Rubens is a registered sex offender.
Was.
This article said is. And I'm like, this is the problem, is that you hear one thing 20 years ago, and you just assume this to never be the case, or right. this to have never have changed, or care to even look into it, and I'm guilty of that myself. But yeah, did your view of him change at all? Like I had mentioned for myself back when we were younger, or you had these things just being blasted at you, Kyle?
Not really. I am a bit older than you guys. And like, I think the consensus was like, it was kind of a joke, but like by the time most of us hit like 13-ish and stuff, we were all like, the dude was cranking in a porno theater. Like, what?
Yeah.
What the fuck? And it, again, allegedly, even like this documentary is like putting a lot more on me that I didn't know, because I've always just assumed, like, big deal, even so. Like, what the fuck? It's legit a porno theater. Like,
as an adult, looking back, I have no idea. Like, even if that was the case,
who cares?
What the fuck's the... Because it's in Florida?
But on the other one, I'm like you, Sean. I really didn't remember it. I guess I was either detached from just caring about the news in 2001 for other reasons I couldn't imagine or whatever, but I didn't really remember the second one. But yeah, again, when you look at it and you see his other... Like, everything he does hoard, like, it's... I think the second one I was going to say is the one where the DA was trying to make a... name for himself with the case and brought the charges and shit, like, because it was the day before they would have just they
dropped
and charge him,
right?
And, yeah, just RIP Paul.
Shit.
But Brian, those Jeffrey Jones charges did stick, so
I was gonna say that's crazy, because that's what makes it worse, because they tied him to that too in the stories.
Yeah, so now every time they bring up Jeffrey Jones, you have to bring up Pee-wee or Paul Rubens.
Is a legit piece of shit.
Yeah.
Seeing the newspaper article of the two of them next to each other was super jarring and very uncomfortable to look at. Like, goddamn, this poor guy. This poor guy. Okay, so I can't ask the last one because I didn't know. Obviously, we didn't talk about this beforehand. I didn't know where your frame of mind, what you thought about those times, and if anything may have changed in watching of this documentary. And there is a lot of focus here on the front end of that, because that's the things that people know. And guys, the balls that it takes for somebody that has known for 6 years that they're dying, and he knew he was getting close there, to go out and do the thing that I think a lot of people imagine about doing, is like putting out something on them. He actually did it. Well, he got Matt Wolf to do this. Yeah, to tell his story or a documentary, ask him all the right questions, and told nobody that he was dying. What a madman.
I would say what a selfless man.
Yeah.
Because all the guy did, and he showed it consistently throughout the documentaries, he just wanted to entertain people. Right. Even when he was in the Pee-wee character, he took it extremely seriously, that he understood it's a kid's character that can also relate to adults. But Paul Rubens was like such a heavy smoker, and he apparently had a guard on him at all times to warn him if a kid was coming.
Mm-hmm.
Just so he can stomp that out, because he didn't want any kids to see him smoking or anything like that while he was on set or in costume or anything like that. Man was just a straight performance artist. He showed his entire life.
Yeah.
And here he was, like, at what point does it really matter to put this out if you're going to die, right? Other than to be like, listen, I don't want anybody to have those thoughts, those incorrect thoughts about me, when I can just explain everything before I go, so you guys actually have a good memory of me than what was portrayed.
But that's the cool part about the documentary, is that he fought with Matt Wolf pretty much the entire way. He wanted to have control over the message that was going out there, but I'm not even sure if he did. I think he was doing it to really push Matt Wolf's buttons, to kind of stay a little bit of an enigma like he was throughout his entire career.
Yeah.
You can never place Paul Rubens.
I think it was really cool the way that he, like you said, was just constantly pushing buttons the whole time, doing the whole like, oh yeah, I didn't mean it. Or did I mean it? I'm just kidding. I didn't mean it.
But maybe I did.
I read a whole interview with Matt Wolf about how he was hesitant to put those pieces in it because he's never put himself in one of his documentaries before, and he dislikes documentarians who put themselves in their documentaries. But he felt it was so critical to show who Paul really was because of all this pushback he was getting. And he's like, honestly, it's the best portrayal we have of who he really is.
Mm-hmm. So which I don't know who mentioned it earlier, possibly Kyle, the working with Tim Burton and just like him being such a control freak's kind of fucked up way of putting it, but like a control freak over his stuff, and things need to be, he was a straight worker, you know, he had no relationships outside. He put everything into work. And if he's going to do something, it's got to be perfect. Like, I get that. And you can see that through and through here.
It's the, you know, he really is the true Hollywood story. Like the kid from Nowhereville that's just driven and has this thing inside of him that he has to get out. And through all odds, like, and just perseverance and grinding it, like, he does what he wants to do. I mean,
and he sacrifices a lot to get it.
Yeah. With everything that happened to him, like, Paul Rubens remained Paul Rubens to the end. What's insane to me is the utter commitment to the Pee-wee bit for so long. Like,
Yeah.
I didn't know he was so involved, like, with, like, David Letterman and all of that shit. Like, I learned so much from this documentary.
Yeah.
But that's the craziest part about it. It's like, after watching this documentary and seeing how committed he was, because there's a lot that I don't remember from when he was, like, with the Groundlings. Only stuff I've heard about how it started as a Groundling show and it grew from there. He honestly reminds me of a professional wrestler.
Mm-hmm. Oh, absolutely.
Mm-hmm. Oh, wow.
Just lives in that kayfabe world. That's all it is. Yeah.
I was going to say that he was one of the last true, like, kayfabe performers, well, like, out there.
And that makes sense, too, coming from his love of the circus, like, his commitment to the bit. Like,
yeah,
you live it.
Yeah, fantastic.
But at the same time, he was so much more comfortable in the skin of Pee-wee than he was in the skin of Paul Rubens. He was able to translate it so beautifully. He showed, when he was going through college, he was obsessed with performance art. And we all know those types of people. Mm-hmm. It was kind of the people you stayed away from most of the time. But when you hung out with him, you're like, this person's fucking fascinating.
Yeah.
But David Lynch just made this act for himself. And he was able to put so much of himself into this act. The things that he loved growing up, he was able to translate that into an adult midnight show world.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
That's crazy.
And his control issues in the early stages really helped him, because he could create this whole world around this character. And I mean, like, the stuff he did with Gary Panter, the artist, he just found an artist that knew, that understood his vision. And he was like, this is the guy. And then, you know, iteration after iteration, he picks what's good. And honestly, as an artist, that's the ideal scenario. Like, we've said constraints are good, but if you have somebody that just digs what you do already and then just wants you to do more and more and more, that's good stuff. I mean, like, I love that for Gary Panter. But like, they built this whole world, or he built this whole world around Pee-wee and these supporting characters, and the way he talks about how it was just effortless. And I think it's because he wasn't getting a lot of pushback, and he could just keep compounding and building and building. And then once it was time to actually make it Hollywood, he started to get pushback, and that's
but
where
he
got uncomfortable.
Also, He also surrounded himself with people who got what he was doing and just wanted to play with him.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And when you get surround yourself with people who just want to play with you like that and are willing to just commit with you, that's a dream come true.
Yeah. I think on the flip side, too, he got in that lucky spot where, like, what he was doing was so weird, but so insanely popular that, like, the studio couldn't really give him notes because they didn't know why it worked. All they knew is that it did work. And they're like, all right, well, do what you need to do. And that's why he got to bring in Gary Panter, because they were trying to give him all these artists. And he's like, no, he doesn't get it. No, this one doesn't work. Blah, blah. Finally, he was like, just bring me Gary. And they brought him in, and boom, like they had the set in like a week, and there
was going to say, and that speaks a lot to like the loyalties that he actually was able to gain through a lot of people, or his loyalty to other people. I'm sure we'll get to it in terms of his personal life and stuff like that, and throwing himself fully into work. And, you know, it really shows that a lot of his personal relationships were things that were just work adjacent, you know, it blossomed from the work branches to the point where when they did the show, what was it, 10-ish years ago, 10, 15 years ago, when they did the revival-ish stage show.
Yep.
He called John Moody to come back and be a part of that. Like all of these original people that he knew from back then, and Gary Panter, like you were saying, like he was someone from previous years that he was steadfast, like, no, this is the guy. This is the guy. And so it just, I think, screams so much to his goodness and loyalty to people to just keep the people who got this going, keep them involved and keep them getting paid.
Yeah, it's interesting, though, because you also have the flip side of that where, like, he just randomly fired Rich Abramson one day, his producer that was with him for all of the movies and the show. And then all of a sudden he's like, he just dropped me and I don't know why. But he's also the guy who was like, I didn't even know what I was doing at the beginning.
Mm-hmm.
So it's interesting because you hear the other side too of people being like, oh yeah, Paul Rubens will just step on you to get what he wants. And he was like, I do that. Or do I? I don't think I do that. I might do that.
But I mean, also, like, I mean, maybe it's cliche, but show me the nice guy in Hollywood. I mean, you know.
Right.
Yeah.
You gotta do some stuff if you want to fucking make it, man. Sometimes it's not always rainbows and butterflies.
And they don't really shy away from saying that.
Did anybody else get unnecessarily pissed off at Phil Hartman in this?
Not unnecessarily.
That was out of nowhere.
I love Phil Hartman. I mean, yeah. But again, that's another part. That's part of it. And I could also see, like, Phil got SNL. Paul knew he wasn't getting it because Gilbert was there. And
Phil needed his space from that to make sure that his career could live also. It's Hollywood. I mean, they got the attention span of goldfish.
Everybody's just
once
going
the PR's off them.
What their publicist tells them to do.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I think the one part of the documentary that showed me the most of who Paul Rubens was, and it was a story I've heard for years and years and years, even while he was still alive, was the birthday text. It was apparently such a huge part of who he was, how he would just send tens of birthday texts to people every single year, and people just lit up getting these every single year. And a lot of people said, like, the thing they're going to miss the most is they're not going to get that text anymore.
Mm. Yeah. I love how he goes, this one's to my eye doctor. And what really brought me a lot of the troll inside me is I knew exactly what was going to come up next. Was you always get that text back. And I'm like, this motherfucker is just going to be trolling Matt Wolf this whole time for the rest of this day.
Yep.
Derail everything with these birthday texts back and forth. You son of a bitch.
I actually saw somebody posted on Instagram or TikTok or something after he died, or they posted up one of the birthday messages they got from him in the past. And it was like a 3-minute long video. Like he put dedication into
these. Cameos to people.
Yeah. And then not charge them.
That is incredible. For someone who for the vast majority of his life, couldn't feel comfortable openly living who he was, who he put out there openly, was a pretty amazing person. So
I'm not convinced that Pee-wee didn't become who he actually was on some level.
You do it long enough, it just kind of takes over a lot of those parts.
Bruce Wayne is the mask.
Mm.
You think Paul Rubens is the mask?
I'm not sure about that, because even with Pee-wee, you do see a lot of what we saw with Paul Rubens when he was just being Paul.
That's
how he
true.
Is still screwing with people just for the fun of it. Like, Pee-wee gives himself more kicks than anyone.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. He's like, doing he entertains it for himself. His entertainment.
He's doing it
yeah.
for him.
I mean, you can yeah. see the way, and it he always looks up with like the laugh, the ha ha, like, I got you. That's like, it's classic, like, shitty kid.
Yeah.
Also, I was shocked to learn that the bangs were like a prosthetic. Didn't know that.
Are you talking about that widow's peak or that little point?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it makes it, as soon as I saw it, I was like, oh, yeah, of course, because I'm seeing his hair now. But just classic stuff. I was going to say, I was really pleasantly surprised for how progressive his family was at that era. Like,
same.
And I think it's crazy that he was so reserved, because he did seem to have overall like a supportive family. Like, he was an out gay man, and his dad told him, he's like, that's fine, just be the best homosexual you can be.
And that night I did.
That night.
But that's like the best part about it, is that was good enough for him.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, he knew the people that he genuinely loved and cared about and were in his circle. They understood it. They got it. They were cool with it. But he's like, I don't know how like other kids that I'm entertaining, their parents are going to feel about this. So mm-hmm. I got to kind of pack this all in for them.
And also, like, being so aware of how that would affect him in Hollywood, being so aware of that and making that decision to rein it back as well, to keep what he finally has gotten, and to not let that be derailed by something like that in the 70s, 80s, AIDS. I was going to say AIDS craze, but that is definitely not
that's
a craze.
That's what it is.
Crisis?
I mean, that's why he also couldn't do it. People were afraid to shake hands with people with AIDS.
Yeah.
Right.
Like, he was never going to be allowed to do whatever he wanted to do.
That whole arc.
I think people were afraid to shake hands with people with AIDS, but I think also people were just afraid to shake hands with gay people, because they're like, oh, they what? So I think it was that sort of thing.
I'm going to catch the gay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I can't put my kids around Pee-wee. You know, he's that gay.
Yeah. If I do that, I'm going to go home and turn my frog gay.
Turn the damn frogs gay.
But it was wild. Like,
hi ho,
man. I felt for him.
I'm gonna come off as crazy here, but like, I never really in my head put together that he was gay, like, ever.
I didn't either. So I don't know if it's just something with,
I'm so thankful.
Agreed.
Our age range, but
yeah, I just accepted him as like, he is him, you know, kind of thing. And when he starts it, this documentary off by saying it, I'm just like, oh, okay. That makes sense. Like, I get it. Sure. I've never once thought about it. And this whole story with Guy, from them being together to them splitting up and him taking a lot of things from Guy and a lot of his jokes and the things that he would say and injecting it into Pee-wee, all the way up to him telling the story about visiting him in New York and Guy dying just hours later. Man, this documentary was full of so many ups and downs and like just utter heartbreak. I'm like, man, I just found out he was gay like 20 minutes ago. Don't do this to me.
And then, of course, they like subtly introduced the 20-year-old cat. They're like, oh, yeah, they had a cat and he was alive for 20 years. And then in the later in the documentary, you see the cat again and you're like, oh, God, The oh, cat outlived Guy.
But the craziest part about it is, like, I'm looking back on the documentary now, and do we know Paul Reubens any better? Does he let us know him any better?
I think we have a better idea of where Pee-wee came from.
Yeah.
But Paul himself is still an enigma.
Mm-hmm. And I think that's the way he would want it, though.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I feel like he got such a kick out of that.
Like, all it did was affirm, like, things that, like, I've never thought about, but just made sense, and clear up some of the court-ish stuff, maybe, allegedly. I don't know, but Kyle, what were you going to say?
Just as a guy that, like, most of the podcasts I like are comedians talking to other comedians about, like, things happening, like backstage comedy stuff, like the meat and potatoes of comedy. That's what I really appreciated about this, is like all of that history of the Groundlings and like all of like what he did and created there. They were selling out like a 99 seat theater and only selling 11 tickets because the rest were all comped to people like Scorsese and De Niro coming to a 99 seat theater, to where they Pee-wee Herman would sell out the fucking Roxy? Are you kidding me? That is insane.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it got him a fucking movie with Tim Burton. Like, the trajectory, it's like you couldn't write it. It's almost like you wouldn't believe it if you told this as like a movie.
Yeah.
Maybe. Yeah. It is so fantastical.
Oh, man. I just realized that. We are probably going to eventually get a Paul Reubens biopic, aren't we?
Oh, of course.
I mean,
I did love his little... The whole reason he bought his house is because if you came up from the pool in that one area, you could see the Hollywood sign, and I was like, yeah I get it. I 100% get it.
Oh, yeah. I'm jumping off my diving board, and I can see the Hollywood sign.
I'll buy
sold.
It.
Sold.
This
sold.
One.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, and I just love that because... I don't know, man. It was crazy to learn so much, because I've always seen Pee-wee as like the kid show. I mean, I knew there were adult things, but to learn so much of it was like an adult show, and Pee-wee is almost like the kid insert, but he's fully grown, so it's funny, but he's got that Arrested Development type stuff, and he's like a Captain Kangaroo type, and so it's also hitting all these other people's nostalgia bones, and like they're having this moment, but then like, I don't know, it's like a lightning in the bottle type thing that you couldn't create. It just has to be made organically.
I love it because it's during an age where you had characters who were playing things. Like, before that, you had Elvira, you had Pee-wee, and during the same time, you got Ernest P. Worrell.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I feel like that's one of the reasons why, when Paul Reubens got in trouble the first time, I just fell back on Ernest. It was one of those like, no, I'm good still. We still got our hero.
Yeah.
Our denim vest wearing heroes.
You know what I mean?
That is a great fucking point. Great fucking point. During that time period that you fell back on Ernest, what really fascinated me in this documentary was watching how somebody could bounce back from that.
He was so tenacious. He just kept coming back.
Yeah.
He went to MTV and got the standing O.
Yeah.
And the joke is so good. You guys hear any good jokes lately?
Man. I still died when he said it.
Like, man, that guy could not be squelched. And just the satisfaction that I got knowing that all of the media was just like, what the fuck? How did this just happen? Was just such a beautiful icing on the cake of that. And then him kind of expanding into the things that he got into post Pee-wee was also very fascinating, because there's little bits and bobs that I never really picked up on. Like, I knew the What We Do in the Shadows. I've seen that. But is that coming from his run on Buffy the Vampire Slayer?
I want to talk about that for a second, actually.
Me too.
Yeah. Can we talk about David Arquette and how I haven't thought about him or seen him in 20 years? And you see him, you're like, what is happening? Where did my childhood go?
Yeah.
Oh, no. David Arquette is looking old. What does that say about me?
Yeah. I was going to say, I really appreciated how I lost it.
How chill of a dude David Arquette was, and he's like, it was did about you do it? He's like, no, he's like, come live with me.
I mean, that was really cool. Keep going and I'll interject if it comes back.
Yeah. That was it. Like, I just wanted to talk about how he was able to bounce back from that and where he went from there.
That's what I like the Buffy. I wanted to come back to Buffy the Vampire Slayer because David Arquette said that he had it written into his contract that his character should, he wanted it to look as most like his mugshot as he could.
Yeah.
Which
I thought was fucking way to just own it. Just fucking own it.
I mean, that's the easiest way to really quiet critics is just get ahead of it. Lean in. There's nothing you could do if you lean in.
Right. If you're saying the bad stuff about yourself, it feels weird for them to compound on it.
You also asked earlier, Sean, if like our opinions of Pee-wee changed, and that I also saw Buffy young as a kid and I realized it was Paul Reubens and I was super into it then too. I was like, fuck yeah, man. That's Pee-wee. This movie's awesome. He's great in this. He's hilarious.
Okay. So to come back on that, how did it make you feel to see this, see that Buffy, see the mugshot, and realize that for every year for the last 20 years prior to this, that's just how he looked outside of Pee-wee stuff. He looked like that since college.
Yeah.
Like that dude had one look. He had two looks. He had Pee-wee and his mugshot.
And Charlie Manson. That was the two looks.
Yeah.
He even admits to it. But hey, man, it's crazy. It gives you a lot of anonymity because, like, it does, you see that guy and you're like, that's not Pee-wee.
No, yeah. Because if it was Pee-wee, he'd be like, I'm here to suck your blood.
When he gets stabbed, and he's like, ooh.
He said, kill him harder or kill him. Whatever the line was,
suck I rewound it
like four times. Like, what just happened? What is that line?
Yeah, he's great in that fucking movie.
Kill him
man.
Harder.
And again, I love that he's just, he went that way, like, go against type, man. Fuck it.
Mm-hmm.
He spent so long as Pee-wee, be yourself. And then he gets Blow, which gets him crazy critical. Like, people are like, oh, hey, Paul Reubens can do things.
I just watched that movie the first time in years, probably around a year ago.
Mm-hmm.
It still works.
Mm-hmm. It was one of the, at my theater, we had that, and I've seen Blow, like, on the big screen more than 10 times, for sure, because I just walk in and watch it.
Did you do the Paul Reubens salute while you were in the theater?
Oh, yeah. Every time. You gotta, you know, snakes gotta breathe, fellas. We've
snakes
been over
gotta
this.
Breathe.
Talked about this earlier.
I don't know why. I just thought of Paul Reubens and Blazing Saddles. Excuse me while I whip this out.
Oh, no.
He should have done
what
that.
Has happened?
That would have been like, if he'd lived long enough to go meta, that could have been like a Super Bowl commercial in 2038, maybe.
Mm-hmm. That long?
They have Paul Reubens in Blazing Saddles selling Lay's potato chips.
But he's dressed up as the Indian that Mel Brooks played when they're circling the wagons.
No, he's dressed up as
the lounge singer
Tip-Toe
Indian.
Joe? His Native American character that he started off, that he thought he was going to make it big as that guy.
Yeah, I'm glad
show.
He pivoted.
I love watching somebody come to terms with what they did was racist, like in real time.
Yeah. Yeah, that was a very...
It might have been... It was racist.
Yeah.
Again, that was another great historical thing to just see how many times he was actually on TV before Pee-wee, and even as Pee-wee. He did the Dating Game as Pee-wee in character and won. I had no idea.
Insane.
I mean,
I knew he had been on the Dating Game.
Didn't
the
serial killer end up
episode.
Winning that too? Like, anyone could go on there. And
I had no idea that he won. I'd always heard that he had gone on like the Dating Game. But when it was revealed that he would, I about shit my pants. Though, like, you know it's going to end up him having won, right? Like, it's in there for a reason. But come the fuck on. What?
I still didn't know he would win. Like, who would pick?
Right.
Pee-wee? What?
It's that natural charisma.
Yeah.
What was it like? That's foot it. Massage? What is it, an erotic foot massage or something like that? Like, we're going to go playing in some sand and then I'm going to pick it out of your nails.
If you want any references, just go ask Dottie.
Oh, can we talk about Dottie though?
Boys, can we talk about Dottie?
The fact that E.G. Daily, with everybody that was in this fucking documentary,
right?
E.G. Daily wasn't in this.
I was a little bummed out.
I also couldn't believe they didn't. I get it because it's the documentary, but they talked about Large Barge and didn't show.
And didn't show
the
it.
The I was like, come on.
Yeah.
I was a little
upset.
They
even referenced the bit.
Yeah. They Weird. Showed like after the bit.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But just not it. Mm. Mm.
Just trying to keep that serious tone. You know what I'm saying?
I did love like how everything Pee-wee that he ever wrote just came instantly. He never had to work at it.
Just came naturally.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Just like things that he had picked up. This is not wrapping back around to the second case there, the indecent, or man, what did he even plead down
obscenity.
To? Obscenity.
Obscenity.
Like possession of porn. Like really? Like in his home? Whatever. Whatever.
Obscene.
That all actually stems for listeners that aren't, that didn't watch this for some reason. And if you haven't, like, I'm
you
honestly
should.
Judging you,
you
right
should.
Now from the past. Definitely do it. 10 out of 10. That's my rating right there. 10 ha-has out of 10 ha-has. He is a collector. He became a collector. He collected all sorts of things. He had.
Hoarder, really.
Borderline hoarding.
It's a fine line that he's walking for sure.
Yeah. Luckily,
it is a fine
rich
line.
Enough to own a house large enough that it's not
exactly.
Hoarding.
He can display it so it's a collection, but he was a hoarder. Yeah.
He filled his house with fuck you artifacts
if
from
he
all
had
the money
a
he made.
Couple hundred less square feet, he would have been a hoarder.
They would have found Coco at the bottom of his gay porn collection.
Jeez.
Coco lived vintage. To a ripe age of 17 in this scenario.
Vintage gay erotica. Get it right.
My bad, guys. So somebody, an acquaintance, had gone to his house and was like, yeah, he's got some child porn there. Who's they're also a friend or acquaintance of what Jeffrey Jones mentioned earlier. This was right around this is the exact same time. And it just turned out, it was like vintage erotica and magazines and whatever. And they couldn't tie it to literally anything. It was stuff that he hadn't even looked at, kind of stuff. He just, like you guys said, okay, this is me realizing, yes, he's actually a hoarder. Was. But the good thing that came out of his hoarding is the sheer breadth of content that he was able to provide to these two episodes, whether it be old photos stemming back to his childhood, to all of these home videos going back to the 70s, like going back to his college days, like that was, I'm so thankful that he was such a, he couldn't let that stuff go. He always had a place for it and was able to share that stuff with the world. And you were able to get a peek behind pre-Pee-wee, I thought was one of the most fascinating things. Pre-Wee.
Pre-Wee.
Okay.
That was really good.
Wow. And him, like seeing him, like, go to the Groundlings, like you said, Dave, and like find who he was and what his thing was so cool. So cool. What were some standout moments for you guys in this?
I mean, anytime I see Elvira, I love Elvira.
It took me a while to connect it and I was like, holy shit, that's Elvira?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. That is Elvira, roughly 33 pounds lighter from lack of all of that makeup.
Oh, I thought you were going to say she got her tits done and reduced.
I'm kind of with you, Sean. I really liked the early stuff, like learning about Paul Rubens, like where he came from. I don't know. I really enjoyed that his dad and family were just so goddamn supportive as like airline guy in like the 30s and 40s. That right. was pretty fucking great. Mm-hmm. And just all the early stuff, again, learning where Pee-wee came from, like the live performance roots, and it's great because, again, I've never put much thought into where it did come from. So this was all fascinating. I also really got a sick kick out of the fact that Sean, who periodically just does not like long movies, has maybe picked the longest thing we've ever done in Experience Grand History at a 3-hour long movie. But
that's
I did
because
not mind
he was waiting for Dottie
at all. As soon as part one ended, I started part two.
Instantly
right
hit
up.
That button to start.
I was like, let's fucking go, baby. I'm in this. So all in all, really enjoyed this one, Sean. I don't know if I would have watched this, but I feel richer for it, and I'm glad to, and I'm telling everybody to watch it. It is a great documentary.
I finished this at work at just shy of 8 o'clock this morning, and like that, the end of that, after you have that last hour so of just like seeing how like rich he was and how hurt he was. And like the big thing from him is like, you can say a lot about me. You can think I'm weird. You can think all of these things, but I don't want you to ever think I'm a pedophile. Right. And to just like see someone so hurt to have to say those words was just so shattering. And then just like hearing how rich he was as a person and how he had to sign his assistant had to sign a waiver so he could be around her daughter. And like all of that, it was just like,
that was heartbreaking.
Punch,
that part.
Punch of heartbreak leading to the end. But I, even with that being said, I'm so glad that I saw that and saw just who he was as a person in the beginning of life. And like just who he was in the end when nobody knew what was going on. What about you, Brian? What was your big takeaway from this or favorite part?
I found it weird that there was that like year where he wouldn't return Matt Wolf's phone calls. This isn't my favorite part. It's just there was like a long time there where he would not communicate with him. And they were talking about it was the part where they were filming about the lawsuits against him. His legal issues, and he just stopped answering questions, and that seems strange to me. And then Matt Wolf was worried the whole thing was going to go unfinished because of it. And then to get that voicemail or that voice note from the day before he died, that just ended it all on such a perfect note. I mean, Matt Wolf had thousands of hours of footage. Of just archival footage and 40 hours of interview, and boiled it down to 3 hours, 20 minutes of just the best information on the ups and downs. And like to see him building that character from nothing and then building the world around him. It's a fantastic documentary, and I have nothing but good things to say about it. It did not feel like it was 3.5 hours long.
Mm-mm. Yeah. Now that Kyle, you mentioned that, and it's possibly the longest thing, like
I think easily,
yeah, definitely very long. 3.5 hours is a long time.
There were multiple times where I would like it was in the middle of each episode, 2 episodes long, where I would like pause and I'd be halfway through, and I'd be like, oh god, there's still so much to go, but I'm not upset.
I got excited when I paused in this. I had a pause on episode 2 and I thought for sure there was only like 20 minutes left, and I had paused and I'm like, fuck yeah, there's like an hour left, let's go.
That's a sign of a good thing when you pause it and you're happy that there's more than you thought was left.
What about you, Dave? Round us out here.
I feel like my biggest takeaway from it is he talked about getting his star on the Walk of Fame, and it wasn't him. Pee-wee Herman got a star on the Walk of Fame, and Paul Rubens was a little upset, but also kind of not, saying like, but it doesn't say Paul Rubens, it's Pee-wee Herman. He could have said who he was at any point.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And he actively chose not to. He chose to live in this performance and make his life his art, like he was trying to do the entire time. Matt Wolf said that when he pitched this to Paul Rubens, Paul Rubens wanted to kind of clear some things up about his life. He wanted to talk about the past, and Paul Rubens must have known, obviously, that his time was running out in order to even say yes to this. And Matt Wolff said, I just want to do a portrait of an artist, because that's the way he saw him too, and that's the way he portrayed him in this. But hearing Paul Rubens talk about the star on the Walk of Fame and kind of winking to the camera a little, like, no, it's not Paul Rubens, Pee Wee Herman. He could have been Paul Rubens at any time.
Right. That's the same reason that when he has his gripe with Tim Burton, it's not actually about Tim Burton. He just has a little bit of regret of not putting his name on the movie. Because it says in the credits, Pee Wee Herman as himself. And then when it gets to the writing, it says Paul Rubens. He's like, nobody knows who that is. Everybody
no one knows
thinks I'm just
at
Pee
all. Wee. Exactly. Yeah. And I found that absolutely fascinating, that he was so committed to the character because he understood what the character was to other people, that he was able to put Paul Rubens kind of, I don't want to say in the rear view, but definitely off to the side just to be this character that everyone loved.
Mm-hmm.
It's not to say that people didn't love Paul Rubens, because by all accounts, everyone loved Paul Rubens.
David Arquette. Yeah. I trust everything he says.
It's something to say that, like, you know, today, Cassandra Peterson doesn't have to be Cassandra Peterson. Cassandra Peterson can still be Elvira, right? And that's just got so much legs and longevity and other things. Yeah. I'm glad that he was able to, you know, after the whole first incident, be able to branch more into himself and find that, you know. I have never seen Big Top.
Me either.
Never seen it. And I had no idea about this kiss.
I also did not know.
It's the only thing I remember from that movie.
God, guys. Oh, my God.
I thought that it's always been hilarious to me, too, because you are like, why is Pee-wee kissing so long?
Like, oh, man, that is...
Where's the bike?
What I love so much about Paul Rubens and stuff like this is it makes me feel a lot like maybe it's just things that I picked up for, like, my own sense of humor and stuff like that, where it's, I don't really care. I just want to make myself laugh. Like, I'm here to entertain me a lot. And so being able to watch him just be a 70-something-year-old child to this director made me so happy. And just knowing that that is just him means, I don't know, I can still do that. You don't need to grow up. Whatever.
You don't, but I'm just even thinking back on it. I found it so important how they brought up Gilbert Gottfried in the documentary, Gilbert Gottfried was another person just committed to the bit.
Right.
And
Paul
Rubens lost out on SNL to Gilbert Gottfried because Gilbert Gottfried was just committed to his own bit.
And had the benefit of being the best
the
friend.
The writer's best friend.
Yep.
It helps. It helps. Yeah. But I mean,
it's all
can
about
you imagine,
who you know.
Can you imagine Paul Rubens' audition tape for SNL?
No.
Can you imagine without
that shit crazy?
A family walks into a talent agency.
Could you imagine? Okay, so there's Rubens as Pee-wee, right?
The
but then could you see Pee-wee being all of these characters on SNL? It's not even Paul Rubens. It's Pee-wee being these characters.
Oh, Pee-wee is the... It's a very...
Yes.
That's,
could you imagine Pee-wee playing someone on Celebrity Jeopardy?
No, but what's the difference between what Paul Rubens was trying to do as Pee-wee and what Andy Kaufman was just doing.
Mm-hmm. That's what I was getting to. Was it's just Kaufman almost at that point,
right?
Mm-hmm. And Tony Clifton.
Damn, this makes me want to go just down an entire rabbit hole of documentaries, like just tracking down all of these documentaries on all of these people.
Just go watch Dear Zachary. It'll make you not want to watch a documentary ever again. It's too real.
I want to say sold, but
way
also
too fucking real.
I don't know if I want to.
No, don't. I'm telling you, don't. It will bring you down. It will bum you out for forever.
Okay, dear Zachary, don't watch this.
Now I'm super curious.
I didn't hear what you said.
It's an unbelievable documentary.
Do not watch Dear Zachary. Watch Dear Zachary.
No, stop it, though. It's just making me want to watch it more when you say that.
Bro, if you trusted me about Martyrs, trust me about Dear Zachary.
Oh, why didn't you say the whole thing? Dear Zachary, a letter to a son about his father?
If I included those extra six words, that would change the entire thing.
Oh, you know what? I don't want to see it anymore.
Well, this tells me the entire plot, Dave.
I didn't know that.
Dear Zachary, how I learned to anything. Stop worrying and love the murder.
You know what this could have been? It could have been an entire movie about Little Mermaid.
Yeah.
And Little Mermaid was actually in love with Zachary, but then Prince Eric came around because he was actually Zachary's twin. And that's her writing Zachary to say, I fucked Eric.
Can you imagine if there was a crossover with Pee-wee and the Little Mermaid where Ursula takes Pee-wee's voice and then you just see Ursula doing Pee-wee's voice the entire time?
Oh my God. Guys.
Poor unfortunate soul.
Oh, no. There's clearly so much more in this 3.5-hour documentary that, we couldn't even touch if we wanted to.
No, but we know.
This is me just to you listeners. If you have any history with PV or you had a childhood anything. That involved him, or you've never even, if you are one of them 20-something-year-old kids that Kyle works with, check this out. Find out what you were missing. Just see a genius of a man that had an insane life. Pee-wee as himself. It's on Max or HBO Max or Max or whatever the fuck it's called.
No one knows anymore.
No one knows. It was just HBO Max last year and then Max for 11 months and now they're...
The people who are doing the marketing are probably the same people who tried to tell Pee-wee that there's a bike in the basement of the Alamo.
Can we talk about Dottie, though? Can we?
Let's talk about
I'm a rebel, Dottie.
I don't have to watch it. I lived it.
Check it out, guys. It's fantastic. But that brings my week to a close. I want to thank everybody for joining me this week. It was a hell of a time. It was a great doc. But next week, it's Brian. Brian's going to be up. And yeah. Brian, what are you bringing next week?
Next week, I'm bringing some nostalgia. We're going back to the summer camp. We've got Janine Garofalo, David Hyde Pierce, Molly Shannon, Paul Rudd, Christopher Maloney, Michael Showalter, Ken Marino, Michael Ian Black, Amy Poehler, Bradley Cooper, Jesus Elizabeth Banks,
Christ.
And H. John Benjamin as a can of mixed vegetables. It's going to get wet. It's going to get hot because it's wet, hot American summer next week.
That's right, baby.
Just real quick. Obviously not. We're not doing that one right now. When did that movie come out? Because holy fuck. That
Later was. Than you
2001.
Think.
2001.
Dude. What?
It's insane.
That has the vibes of like a 1997 flash. 100%. Flick, like right before everybody got huge.
Blows my mind when I hear it's like pre-9/11. Kind of. barely.
Like wow. Filmed, but
right
not released.
The cusp of
yeah.
It.
That's crazy.
I guess it was a few months before.
That is a flick that I have not seen, so I look forward to seeing that.
I'm very
next
hyped
week.
For this. That Sean has never seen Wet Hot.
I'm very hyped for Sean watching this.
Yeah, me too. It's not often I meet somebody that has never seen Wet Hot, so I'm trying not to overhype or oversell anything.
Right.
Is it a surprise though that I haven't?
A little bit.
Because it is like usually regarded as like one of the best comedies ever. It's in that discussion.
For our generation, for sure.
It's up there.
I love how Kyle's like, I'm not trying to overhype it.
I know.
And then says,
it's the greatest thing ever.
It will make your dick hard and you will come fucking concrete from it.
Yeah, but he didn't hype it though because it's just regarded by everybody.
He comes concrete.
I'm not saying it. That's critics.
It's just an elongated kidney stone. That's what that is.
Oh my God. I'm going to be hired by a construction company to jizz out a building. Fuck.
Oh, we're so off.
Is that what the Fallon Head's about?
I think so. Yes. I thought that was the Brutalist.
Anyways, I thank everybody for being here for this episode. But I want to thank you, the listeners, for hanging out as well and listening to us every week. I'm sure you already know this, but if you enjoy what we do, you can head on over to the Patreon, which you can find a link for in the linktree.com/experiencegrind. It's going to have our Patreon. It's going to have our Discord. It's going to have all of the links that you need to come hang out, hear more bonus content, stuff like that. So check us out there. And I guess until next week. That was terrible. Somebody else do it. Quick.
Go secret word yourself.